You've seen those headlines about the Oregon protesters, right? The armed militia members who've been occupying a federal wildlife refuge for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, this is Bran Thornton, and here we are at the refuge outside of Burns, Oregon.
Bran Thornton.
Yes.
And you're from Las Vegas.
I'm from Las Vegas.
How do you justify this action?
It's very easy. You know, Thomas Jefferson said, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Okay?
These Oregon protesters are doing something that's increasingly common in American political rhetoric right now. They're invoking the nation's founders.
If you go to the Declaration of Independence, and when a government becomes corrupted, you actually have the sacred obligation responsibility to replace that government.
I'm Anne Strainchamps, and today on To the Best of Our Knowledge, the dream of a more perfect union. It's what our founders were trying to create. It's in the preamble to the Constitution. So how do we deal with political extremism? I mean, take those guys in Oregon. How would you describe them?
Well, they are kind of crazy from my point of view because they're talking to God. They're getting directions from God.
That's Scott Carrier. He's a Peabody Award-winning public radio journalist, and he was on vacation in Oregon when he heard the first news reports about armed protesters occupying federal land. And the thing about Scott is he really believes in and has built his career around listening to people he probably doesn't agree with. So he grabbed his gear and went to talk with these guys.
Well, they are kind of they're kind of crazy from my point of view because they're talking to God. They're getting directions from God. And the media is not mentioning that very much. John Krakauer wrote an essay for Medium, an online journal. It's quite good. It's because he wrote a book called Under the Banner of Heaven about Mormon fanatics. But the other media outlets are kind of ignoring that.
So who did you talk to?
I talked to one of the 12 or so guys who originally walked into the headquarters.
What did you ask him?
Well, I wanted to know about their religious beliefs and how their beliefs influence what they're doing.
What did
they're
you
Mormons.
Say?
They're more that not all of them are Mormons, but the main core of them are Mormons, and they're acting in ways that people of the LDS faith would understand because they're following guidelines and teachings in their sacred books.
But what about the religious justification?
Well,
doesn't that play into this as well?
Yes, it does. In our belief system,
can you explain that?
The Lord in the I believe it's the 98th section of the Doctrine and Covenants. Okay, he tells us that if the government does these egregious actions, we're to petition it, constantly petition it, and that's the first step. And then if they will not receive you, then you could do a priesthood curse, which I have done in all these places.
Curses?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Priesthood curses.
Priesthood curses.
No, I've never heard of a priesthood curse. I grew up in Salt Lake among Mormons. I've never heard of this.
Yeah, they're not real familiar with it, but it's very clear. You go to... There's a washing of your feet, okay?
You wash your own feet?
You just take water, you pour your feet, and by the priesthood authority that you hold, you petition the Lord, and you present it to him, the oppression, and present the names of those that are actually doing the oppression.
Huh. While you're washing your feet?
Yes.
Huh. Have you guys done that here?
Yeah, I did.
You've been here?
Yes, I did it the first thing when I got here. It was the first thing I did.
I think that they are kind of lunatics.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because I think that when you start going around saying that you're talking to God, I think that's probably in the DSM, you know? As a psychological problem, you know. Whether it's megalomania or grandiosity or just hallucinations, it's not normal for people to take extreme measures and justify them by saying that God told them to do it.
Did they seem in any other ways mentally ill or unstable?
No, they're very calm, which was, you know, they're trying to stay calm. They're trying not to appear violent because they don't want to be called terrorists. You know, they don't want to give people the idea that they're scary or crazy because what they think what they're doing is perfectly rational.
Absolutely. Absolutely. God told us to do this. Absolutely.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. If you have the Lord's laws in your heart, which he said he'd write his law in your heart in the last days, okay? And those people have a right to, and everybody has a right to survive. Everybody has to right, but we were promised in the Book of Mormon there'd never be a king on this land, okay? And you're seeing the attempts to establish a king on this land, but it's always supposed to be constitutional law, okay? And the ownership of this land is the people. So people love freedom. They want their freedom.
There are more reporters and camera people up there than there are militia people, militiamen, by about 2 to 1 at least, I would say. So he's got trucks with satellite dishes, 3 satellite trucks, banks of cameras and microphones set up. It's kind of, it's a media circus, very unpleasant situation, actually, and kind of crazy that way because everybody's so desperate to get a story.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that they're depending upon for their story, they're kind of crazy. And the reports that I've seen, it's like they're not being called out by the reporters as being somewhat insane. And I'm kind of upset about that.
So this kind of thing that you did in Oregon, Scott, this is what you do. You know, you've gone to countless places where you, and especially you've sought out people you don't agree with, people who might seem to be fringe in some way or another, and talked with them. I mean, I'm thinking right now about the wonderful piece you did where you went and looked for Trump supporters.
Well, I get tired when I am following a story and, you know, in the media, reading newspapers, listening to radio, watching stuff on the web, where they don't actually talk to the people who are involved directly. And I just felt like I wasn't hearing anything from the people who actually support Donald Trump. And that's what I want to know. That's the primary thing. It's like, why would anybody support this man for president? Because it seemed kind of mysterious. Like, you know, how does that work in someone's mind that you would want to have Donald Trump as president?
So did you just show up in Nevada and start driving around and asking people if they like Donald Trump or not?
Yes, that's what I did. And that sounds strange, but I do it a lot. I drive around and just talk to people at random, walk up to them and start, you know, say I'm a radio producer, I'm working on a story, and ask them if they'd like to talk about whatever subject, you know, I'm working on at the time.
Were you upfront with people about how you felt about Donald Trump?
Yes. Yeah. I would say that I don't support Donald Trump, and I can't really understand why anybody would. But I'm just upfront and very direct, and people are fine with that.
Listening to your piece that you did, I mean, it's kind of astonishing, in fact, how willing people are to talk with you and how open they are. I mean, there's a moment... You're talking with this woman, Lorraine Butts, in Elko,
right.
Nevada, right? Tell us about her.
She was with her family on the east side of the Ruby Mountains in the Ruby Valley. It's a very remote part of Nevada, and they were broken down. And so they were waiting for a new tire to come from Elko, which was about 100 miles away, a new wheel. I drove by and stopped, asked them if they needed any help, and then, you know, it was beyond me to help them. But then I started talking to the mother, Lorraine. She didn't have anything to do, you know. They were basically waiting.
What is it that Donald Trump is proposing that you like, his positions?
Some of it I like. Some of them I'd like to know how he really wants to enforce immigration. I realize dealing with all the illegals that are in our country is going to be extremely difficult. And we lived with it when we were stationed in San Diego for 10 years. Oh. You know, so, you know, I know.
With the military.
Yes, with the military. My husband's retired Navy.
Navy.
So can I say this?
Sure.
It's terrible. But at night when the sun goes down, it's like cockroaches invading. But they're people crossing, coming over the hills, and you would see their trash and their garbage and everything else and the dirty diapers in the bushes. You know, you have a different look when you're actually living down there with it than people who are very sanitized and uppity and in their highbrow neighborhoods. They don't see some of the other things.
The thing that is kind of amazing to me about that tape with Lorraine is how open she is. There's this moment where she says something that just seems so racist, and she says it so casually. That was...
Right. Yeah.
And what did you make of that?
I think a lot of people feel like her, like she does. And she was just brave enough to say it, I guess. Or at least I think that's how she felt about it.
I like the word you use, brave. Because a lot of people would not think that a woman airing her racist views is especially brave. They certainly wouldn't use that word for Lorraine. Why do you?
It's something that she believed to be true. And she also knew that a lot of people wouldn't agree with it and would call her a racist for saying it. So in that situation, I think she was brave to say what she believed, in spite of the fact that she would be criticized and ridiculed for it. I don't agree with what she said, but I think it took some guts to say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are lots of different beliefs and ways of seeing the world besides the one, you know, our own.
Mm-hmm.
There are different cosmologies.
Right.
There are different cosmologies, ways to explain where we come from, why we're here, and where we're going. And people with different cosmologies have a very hard time communicating because even if they're using the same words, the words have different meanings in, you know, through the different cosmologies. And so the conversations very often end up in arguments,
mm-hmm.
and people getting upset because when you're using the same words but they have different meanings, it's like nothing's really being understood.
So people get upset because they're trying to communicate in some ways, but they can't because they're meaning
right.
different things.
Right.
And so then we avoid, you know, those conversations, right? I know exactly
what
that feels
like. Yeah, we avoid the conversations and those people and basically just talk to people like ourselves.
That's funny. We categorize people so automatically. You're either you're racist or you're not, you're right wing or
yeah.
you're progressive, and then we dismiss people after
yeah.
we've categorized them.
These people who have different opinions than I do, they have kids who get sick and maybe end up in the hospital, or they have loved ones, family members who die or lose a job or get, you know, an accident. I mean, those are the serious things, the things that are really important. You know, if someone's marriage is breaking up for whatever reason, or, you know, the tragedies. And whether we can agree upon, you know, who to vote for president is rather small in comparison to that. And so I try to look at people and what we have in common, you know. There's so much more in common.
Scott Carrier is a Peabody Award-winning radio journalist. He's famous for his work on This American Life. And you can hear his piece about Trump supporters and lots of other great stories on his podcast. It's called Home of the Brave.